healthy, so I think this is definitely a nice little contingency plan in terms of getting that one going. But Tyler Boyd lands in Nashville with former head coach, former offensive coordinator, I guess, Brian Callahan.
Am I wrong, or were the numbers floating around last week, like 2 years, $15 million?
I saw that.
And it was about Tyler Boyd, right? Like, mm-hmm. that was the contract he was after with the Titans?
Yeah.
Because I remember thinking, well, that's a little high.
I'm good with what we got now.
No, yeah, 1 year, 4.5, I mean, that's nothing. I mean, that just obviously comes off the books next year, and mm-hmm. you have cap space. So, like, I think it's a pretty low-risk move. And I will say the Titans do seem to have some wide receiving depth. We'll talk a little bit more in-depth about that with Easton Freeze, Broadway Sports. He joined us before the draft and brought it. We're going to have him back on in the third hour. But as a Titans fan, feel pretty good about what they've done so far this offseason. Would still like a safety and maybe one more edge rusher, but I feel like they're at least putting a competent team on. It's crazy to me, man, looking at one of these gambling sites, they have the Titans at like plus 1,300 to win the division. Treating them like they're just losers. And like I'm not trying to be Titans homer or, you know, have that glass, and I don't think the Titans are winning the division, but 1,300 plus 1,300 seems really steep.
It feels like a lot of, it feels like a lot of the national, like, perception of the Titans was so tied up with Mike Vrabel. And then he gets fired and people are just, like, throwing him down to the bottom of the league.
Yeah, I think that's accurate. I think people think the Titans are really missing Mike Vrabel, whereas I think the franchise and the fan base is pretty happy that he's gone. Maybe not at the time when he got fired. I think, you know, people are split. But I think now people are excited about Callahan, excited about having a modern offense, excited about, you know, hopefully being able to score some points and compete. I think the Titans have had a pretty good offseason. Now, whether or not it bears out to wins, you know, we'll see. We'll see if Snead's knee, you know, holds up. We'll see if the secondary's actually improved. We'll see if the offensive line's actually improved and Calvin Ridley can make impact. But, like, I feel like the team brought a lot of good talent in.
You got to at least appreciate them willing to build a team around Will Levis and just say, hey, like, is this your guy or not? You know, like, you're not going to have any questions on whether or not it's, you know, the supporting cast around Will Levis. You're going to know if it's Will Levis or not.
For sure. And, yeah, I mean, I appreciate them at least saying, hey, we're open to the idea that he's the franchise quarterback. They're treating it as if they're open to it just because you spend money while you have a good quarterback on a rookie deal. And it's yet to be seen if Will Levis is any good. Like, he showed flashes last year, but we don't know if he's any good.
From an outsider's perspective, and of course, if they're playing the Colts, I'm going to be rooting for the Colts, but I'm actually intrigued by the Titans just because of the players they brought in, because some of them, for me, are kind of like recognizable names, you know? They did it last year with D-Hop, now they've got, you know, Ridley, and now they've got Tyler Boyd. And to your point, John, they're putting players around Levis. Who knows what Tony Pollard can do, and I mean, that's the stuff that draws casual fans to maybe have more interest and belief in what they could be doing. Because as I've told you before, what I always saw from afar, particularly the last couple of seasons, was it was just kind of a gross brand of football. You know, whether they were winning or losing, and it's a lot, it goes over a lot better when they're winning, but they weren't, and so that made it even worse. So yeah, now I'm kind of like, all right, I'll pay attention to the Titans.
Like, there is a part of me that is weary, and when you phrase it that way, it does kind of scare me a little bit. We're like, hey, yeah, they're just signing recognizable names. Typically, that doesn't work in the NFL, because by the time they're recognizable names, that means they're almost, you know, they're old. Yeah. They're kind of past their prime. Like, Tyler Boyd kind of checks that box for me. Like, I don't expect anything from Tyler Boyd, really. Like, but he's insurance, and he's an upgrade over what the Titans have usually had at wide receiver. When you look at the third, fourth, fifth spot on the depth chart, he knows the system, and he can be kind of the liaison between the coaching staff and the players. I don't expect him to have more than, like, 500 yards. 500 yards I would, like, lock in and be like, oh, that's a great season for him. But, like, yeah, like, Calvin Ridley, I still think of, hey, recognizable name, but I think he's still got some talent, kind of like Hopkins was last year. And you do have some of those top-end talent guys like Snead that you brought in. But also, like, I just keep coming back to, I think you improved two spots on the offensive line drastically. At center and either right tackle or left tackle, depending where they put Latham at. And to me, that's a big deal. And you hope that, like, you're buying low on some guys And you're going to reap the benefits of year two after injury. Like they say that's what it takes in the NFL. It's like, hey, you have an ACL injury. Does it end your career like it used to? But, hey, you need 2 years. So, like, maybe you bought low on Pollard and you bought low or you'll have Harold Landry come back and be back to being a really good defensive player because I thought he was pretty solid at the end of last year. Maybe he'll be back to being a really good player. I don't know. I say all that to say I feel like 1,300 is too high to win the division.
And back to Boyd, I'd still say, I would argue a little bit that, yeah, he's older, but we've talked about this before when we were talking about the possibility of him coming to Nashville, and that was when he has had the chance to fill in for the Bengals, he's been pretty productive. I view it as a guy who's been parked behind two elite receivers in Chase and Higgins. And now, you know, again, he's got Ridley and D-Hop there, but I still think there's a chance he can be pretty productive.
He might be. He's only 29. So, I mean, like, we were talking about him like he's old, but, like, at 29, you're getting kind of the cutoff. Like, the elite receivers could squeeze a couple more years out, like, and hopefully Ridley could squeeze a couple more years out, and Hopkins has one more year. But, yeah, like you said, Boyd's been maybe a little underutilized, so maybe he's a young 29.
Yeah, I mean, he played in 16 games last year and had 760 yards behind, you know, one of the best wide receivers in all of football and probably the best number two.
Would you lock in 500 yards for him, or are you rolling the dice there?
Yeah, I mean, I honestly would probably want a little more. I think like he can get you at least 600 probably next year.
Okay. What does this do for Treylon Burks for you?
Yeah, I think it shows that they're not super confident in him. I think, but it's also showing that this coaching staff isn't just going to have blind faith in Treylon Burks to stay healthy for another year. Like, I think it's also Tyler Boyd's a guy that is, you know, primarily played in the slot, and Burks played a lot in the slot in college, but has kind of gotten moved around more in the NFL. I feel like it's just kind of a contingency backup plan for Burks when the inevitable happens that he's probably going to get hurt.
Would you lock in 500 yards for Treylon Burks?
Probably, yeah. I mean, if you're getting 500 yards from your wide receiver four, it's pretty
damn
good.
That just makes the A.J. Brown trade look so much worse. And
it hurts.
If Treylon Burks was good, it'd be a lot easier to stomach. He still wouldn't be A.J. Brown, but, like, it'd be easier to stomach. It's the fact that he just is nothing.
If he was, like, a top 20 receiver, I think people wouldn't.
Yeah, or just promising. Even, like, have shown some flashes. Like, yeah. The only flash he's really shown was
the
Green Bay game, and then he gets killed by the Eagles a couple weeks later, and like kind of feels like that derailed his career. Like once, because he was good in that game too, or at least he had looked like he was, you know, had a touchdown, then got absolutely rocked, brain scrambled.
Yeah,
he hasn't been able to play since then. Like that dirty hit, or at least right now, I feel like has ruined his career.
And then he had that other one this past season too. He had that pretty nasty concussion this past year. I can't remember who it was, but he hit his head pretty hard too.
Oh yeah, on the sideline, right? Just going to the ground, right?
In his first couple years.
Yeah. Whatever. What else you got for us?
Rashee Rice continues to get in trouble in the offseason for the Kansas City Chiefs.
What are you doing, man? You're the block is already hot.
Yeah.
You are on probation. Treat it like probation. Treat it like you are awaiting trial.
Yeah.
Like, what are you doing? You're out on bail. Like, they're going to throw you under the jail now, at least in the NFL jail. Like, you're going to be in trouble. You're going to be suspended for the whole year if this comes out to be true, because he's wanted for, what, a nightclub fight?
Yeah, allegedly hit a photographer at a nightclub in Dallas on Monday. I mean, that comes after, obviously, his little hit-and-run thing with the multi-vehicle crash back in, I mean, what was that, March? So just, you know, barely even like a whole month ago.
Does it say when this incident allegedly occurred?
Like what time?
What time? But like what is it current? Was it this past weekend?
Yeah, it was Monday.
I didn't know if it was something that happened
early Monday morning, so obviously late Sunday night.
I didn't know if it was something that happened maybe months ago that's just now coming out. Sometimes that happens. So, okay. So, yeah, he's out acting a fool right now.
And I also, when I was looking at this story last night, I just saw some other stuff, and it was only a screenshot, so I don't know where it came from. It looks like an article from The Athletic, but it's Rashee Rice coming out of college, basically, and it's his draft report, and it says, scout's nightmare, has all the size, athletic ability, you know, production, all of that stuff. One team, however, has removed him from their draft board because of behavioral issues. Quote, he's talented, but not a good dude.
Really? So this has just
been a thing, I guess.
Okay.
Since his time at SMU.
Man, I hope that's not the case with the Colts and the Donnay Mitchell. There's been a little bit of that chatter about him.
That stuff's been about his, like, diabetes, not, like, his, like,
They say he's hangry.
Yeah.
Really?
Literally. They say he does a bad job of keeping up with his diabetes.
Oh, see,
he's like hang. Like
I didn't see the diabetes link to it, but there was the thing I saw was basically like if he's been properly fed, he's a great dude. Yeah. When he's hungry, he's in a bad mood and he's ornery and they can't control
him. Wow.
Yeah. So that would make sense that like his blood sugar is just spiking and he's just, you know. I feel like, Bob, if he has a decent little season, he's got a Snickers deal waiting for him. Like, you're not you and you're hungry, Adonis.
This was a huge argument with me and my buddies because, like, I'm a huge fan of A.D. Mitchell. I think he's a great receiver. But a couple of my buddies were like, dude, if he can't keep track of his diabetes, do you expect him to, like, be an NFL wide receiver? Like, that seems something that's so easy.
I mean, Chris Ballard went on this rant about, you know, all the stuff that was being said about him, and it made it sound like, you know, he was a criminal or something, you know, and I didn't realize it was rooted in being hangry.
If they've, you know, labeled him as like that's a medical concern, then I can understand why Ballard was so mad about it. Like, hey, like this is.
Yeah.
And I disagree with your friends or whichever side you were on, Sam. Whoever thought like, hey, he can't be an NFL wide receiver because of this. Like, I would imagine they'll have better nutritionists and people staying on top of him. And like going from college to just getting older, you get more mature. But also like going from college to.
It's your job.
Being professional, and I know NIL, whatever, but like it's a little bit, it's gonna be a lot different for him in the NFL. And I imagine they keep stay on top of him there. Mm-hmm. Well, I thought that was very relatable because I get in a bad mood too when I'm hungry.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not defending the guy, but that's far different than Rashee Rice. Absolutely, is just acting a fool, man. Yeah. This is a joke.
If I'm Patrick Mahomes, I'm like, really? Yeah. I finally found like a good young receiver.
Yeah. Xavier Worthy smiling. That's
. I didn't realize Worthy is so slight of build, man.
Oh, he's a small little guy.
Yeah.
He's tiny.
Because he keeps saying, don't worry about that. They've been interviewing him already, and he's like, I'm not worried. You don't worry, you know.
I think he's listed at like 170 or something like that.
Yeah.
He's pretty small.
I mean, Devonta Smith has helped a little bit, right?
Yeah,
I mean, like, I don't know just how small he is comparatively to that guy, but like, I think of him as a small, slight receiver. He's been fun. He's been healthy.
They're definitely the same build. In college football, an interesting little interview here from Brian Kelly. Basically sat down with somebody from LSU and was talking about, you know, transfer portal and navigating NIL and stuff like that, and was saying that they've been looking for some D-line help in the portal, but that they're not in the market for buying players. They said that you're going to come here and you're going to develop. We have opportunities for NIL with our collective. We've got a great collective, but if you look at the people that got drafted this year, they're all like multi-year guys in our program that we try and develop. We don't want to just pay you to come here for 1 year of production.
Yeah, right. I buy that.
They have like the number one quarterback, wide receiver, and running back in the class right now, right?
Yeah. Sleazeball Brian Kelly.
I don't buy it.
He just always does this.
Yeah.
Every offseason, he'll have something that you're just like, what are you doing? Just be quiet.
Yeah.
Just stay down. You're at a top three job in the country. Maybe the number one job in the country. Maybe. When you consider two of the morons that have won national championships there with Orgeron and Les Miles, like, you might be at the best job in the country. Just shut up and coach ball. I don't want to say shut up and dribble, but like shut up and coach ball, man. Stop whining and complaining.
You barely have to recruit at LSU.
That's what I'm saying.
People
like,
just come to you.
And maybe that's it. Maybe that's what he means. Like, hey, we don't have to pay players because
they'll just come to.
There's so many in Louisiana. Yeah, they'll just come here. Like, maybe that's what he meant, but it's just taken out of context.
Yeah.
But like, shut up. Do you think he feels a lot of pressure to win a national championship? Because like, if Ed Orgeron and Les Miles won one, like you kind of have to, right?
And I think it's the pressure of Notre Dame too. Like those years at Notre Dame.
You mean like just finally breaking through and showing like he's as good as everyone says he is?
Yeah.
Because like I think he had an excuse at Notre Dame. That's what you mean, I assume? Mm-hmm. Getting close. But like, hey, we didn't really blame Brian Kelly for not being able to all the way break through. I know we didn't like Brian Kelly, so we kind of made fun of him. But really it's like, hey, Notre Dame's playing by different rules here. If you ever give him a job with actual resources without like the academic requirements, he'll light it up. And now he's at Louisiana, you know, LSU, that, again, I think you can make the case is the best job in the country. He does need to break through and actually win something, and that just only ramped up whenever Nick Saban retires, of course. Nick Saban's gone. you don't really have an excuse anymore. So I'm going to do that by coming out and complaining about NIL. Smart. Real smart, Brian Kelly. Moron. Anything else?
One last thing. We have been beating the drum for Sam Pittman to get some help with the NIL. He's got a 28-year-old on his roster now. He's doing great.
I thought he was 29. Okay, so he's a little bit younger than maybe, I thought. Okay,
maybe he turns 29, I guess, once the season starts or something. But, yeah, former MLB player Monty Harrison has committed to Arkansas. He was a four-star wide receiver recruit back in the class of 2014. He had some good offers, that's for sure, but tried to spend some time playing some professional baseball. That didn't go too well for him. So I guess he's going back to try out playing football. He didn't use any of his college eligibility. He got drafted out of high school for baseball. So he's good there. He was committed to Nebraska, had good offers. He had offers from Michigan State, Missouri, Indiana, and Kansas. So some, you know, power programs, but got to love like a 30-year-old in the college locker room.
Yeah. Well, his body's probably in, I mean, he's older, but baseball probably didn't take too much out on his, didn't tax his body too much. That's just, I don't know, man. There's a lot of coaches I wouldn't, it just fits with Sam Pittman saying, hey, man, come on over.
I need an official breakdown. I saw a tweet. I forgot to screenshot it, but this guy that just committed to Arkansas that you're talking about is the last part of the Christian Yelich trade that the Marlins.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like he was the last prospect that the Marlins got for Christian Yelich, and like they had a breakdown, and like two of the guys are out of the league. One's a career minor leaguer, and now this guy's a football player in college. Like the Marlins, you know, traded a guy that won MVP, right? Yelich won MVP with the Brewers,
he did,
right?
Yeah.
And they got back an Arkansas football player and a bunch of losers.
That's a great one. I'm sure Petrino's just sitting there going, yeah, keep it coming, man.
Or Petrino was banging his hands on, hey, this is my guy. I need him.
Yeah.
This guy might be a stud. You never know.
Petrino probably recruited him back at Arkansas.
No, I did see that he did not have an Arkansas offer coming out of high school. I saw someone pointing that out.
But those years line up, would that be a crossover? His, like,
probably.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
9 years ago?
Yeah.
Or not, he's 28, so it'd be like 10 years ago. Yes, I mean, he was pretty confidently there in 2014. Although that'd be about the cutoff.
I don't know. I feel like it's getting close.
Actually, it might not be, because I remember he was already at like Western Kentucky when Butch was in like year two or year one. So, yeah, maybe not, actually.
Was it the SMU coach that came in?
Chad Morris
after Petrino? And was there for like an hour?
They had the one guy they gave the interim spot to that had the press conferences. That was, I believe, that they had a kooky guy, I'm pretty sure. But as far as the next coach, I believe you're right.
Yeah,
Petrino got fired in 2012.
Yeah, okay. I was going to say, because he was already at Western Kentucky and had that game against Butch where he had four interceptions in the first quarter or whatever.
Yeah.
Four turnovers in the first quarter. Kind of like in four straight plays, basically.
Yeah, and then Morris and then Bielema. They have not had a good run.
No. Who was that guy? Who was the interim coach? There's one guy. It's not John L. Smith. I'm pretty sure that was a Louisville guy after Petrino left. But I feel like there was just a big meathead they had coaching them that year after Petrino that just was basically felt like Dan Campbell before Dan Campbell became a good coach.
This says
John Smith.
Taver Johnson has been placed in charge of the program while Petrino was on leave.
Yeah, John Smith got a full year, though. He got 2012. And then, yeah, Bielema came in. I don't know. For some reason, he's standing out to me as being embarrassing, but let's move on.
I mean, so the guy's got all his eligibility left, so he could be there till he's like 32.
Yeah, he could.
In the NIL days, you know, it might not be the worst thing. Kelly Washington worked out for the Vols, you know. Maybe this is the new Kelly Washington.
What was Kelly Washington's nickname, the future?
It's weird to call yourself the future when you're already a little bit older than everybody.
Yeah.
It's like when Patrick Beverley told Steph Curry, the next 5 years are mine, and Steph Curry's like, bro, you're 33. Can't say the next 5 years are yours. You're already old. We'll talk about some NBA playoffs coming up after the break. It's the morning show on Fan Run Radio. The segment's brought to you by Knoxville Smiles. From routine dental cleanings to teeth removal, restorative procedures, veneers, implants, they can do it all at Knoxville Smiles. Dr. Stephen Malone and his staff take pride in helping you make the best decision about your dental health. They can do that for you, too. Contact Knoxville Smiles today at 865-539-1776 to set up an appointment. You can take a virtual tour of their state-of-the-art West Knoxville facility at KnoxvilleSmiles.com. KnoxvilleSmiles.com. It was John L. Smith, and that's the guy I was thinking of at Arkansas, and strangely enough, he was the one that went viral for telling people in the press conference, you got to smile. Life's not so bad. Smile. And then people kind of made him the Joker because, you know, of course, the Joker's always like, let's put a smile on that face of yours. Knoxville Smiles, John L. Smith, smile, which we're wrong. Looking through this Arkansas football page, Bob, you kind of realize how many crummy coaches there have been and how they just kind of get lost in the shuffle, because like you, I would have bet just on snap reaction that Chad Morris came before Brett Bielema. That was not the case. Brett Bielema had his whole run at Arkansas, got fired in 2017, then Chad Morris got his 2 years. So his 2 years led into Sam Pittman, which I actually would have thought about that and realized that if we, you know, had actually thought about it, because you don't go from Brett Bielema to Sam Pittman. You don't go from one big old hog that coaches offensive line and run game to another big old hog that coaches offensive run game. Like, you got to sprinkle in the little skinny offensive whiz guy that's going to go 2-10, and then you return to tradition. If we'd actually thought about that, there's always the overcorrection after you fire a coach. You want somebody the opposite of what you just hired. Hey, big dumbass Jeremy Pruitt, defensive guy. Fire him. Well, what are you going to do? Now you're going to bring in the hotshot offensive guy in Josh Heupel. And if Josh Heupel fails, guess what we'll do? We'll probably go with, like, hey, we need to slow down this offense thing. Let's get somebody that can coach defense. You don't go from Brett Bielema to Sam Pittman. We should have thought better on that one.
No, it's true. Man, it also underscores how much of an abject failure Morris was. Because I remember that now, you know, and it's like, yeah, it seems good. He has SMU humming offensively. It's just what they need, and they were a disaster under him.
Did you take Sam Pittman as an O-line coach for Tennessee?
Sure.
When he gets fired?
Sure. Would I take him as a head coach? No. Would I take him as an OC? No. He can come coach offensive line. Although, you know,
he can recruit the hell out of some offensive linemen.
He can, but, you know, I feel like we're coming off of a good cycle for Ellerbe. You know, he got Zalen's hurt. He's done okay, and – you know, you got, is it Campbell? Is it John Campbell? Not John Campbell. Who's the?
You're naming off all transfers.
Yeah, I don't mean the transfer. I know John Campbell's transfer. I'm thinking of who's the 5-star right now in North Carolina? Not Campbell, but he's between us and Clemson and Ohio State.
Oh, like a kid who's,
yeah, the 5-star. Yeah, he's boys with McIntyre. It's not Campbell.
I don't remember his name, to be honest with you.
Jace, you're a recruiting guy by chance? I need a recruiting guy here. I can't keep up with everything here.
I can try to pull it up real quick for you.
Well, no, I was really wanting you just to stall while I kind of scrolled and figured it out myself.
Well, we can
Sanders. Stall, is it David Sanders?
Yes,
David
yes,
Sanders,
yes, yes, David Sanders.
That's who I was thinking of. Yeah. See, I wanted you to stall as I found it.
Yeah,
thank you.
There you go.
Yeah. So, like, I mean, David Sanders, if Ellerbe can land him, then I think Ellerbe's kind of cooking with grease. He's not Sam Pittman, of course, but, like, I think Ellerbe's done an okay job here, or a pretty good job here. Now, if you take Zalen's Hurd out of the mix and we don't have Big Lance here, maybe I have a different opinion. If we're like, hey, we're in another year of not having a left tackle, we're trying to piece it together. But I feel pretty good about our 5-star stud sophomore left tackle right now.
No, I do too. But I think the development side is more what I'm talking about. Like, it feels like we haven't developed an offensive lineman that we've had here for since Heupel's been here. It's just been either guys that are like rollovers from Pruitt's staff or like some just transfers kind of that you've gotten in, which is recruiting, but like not development.
Have we had long enough to do that though? And what I mean by that is like we haven't really had the throwaway year where you're just like, hey, we're going to work on developing guys and like, hey, we might take a step back and we might suck. I feel like in the transfer portal, you don't really do that anymore. you kind of bring in the transfers to play over those guys, and maybe your depth develops and eventually breaks through, or maybe they don't. But I would say, like, the fact that they have Dane Davis at least playing somewhat acceptable offensive line in the SEC, and I know it's not great, but like him and like Ollie Lane play at least somewhat acceptable offensive line in the SEC, I think both of those are kind of accomplishments for the staff.
Playing advocate.
Not to the devil.
No.
Just arguing.
I would argue that the fact that you have to play Dane Davis and Ollie Lane shows that you can't develop the guys.
Oh, no, I don't disagree with that. That's a red flag. That's bad. I'm just saying, like, I feel like it's hard to develop depth in the transfer portal these days. But, no, there's a long list of guys that haven't developed. That's completely fair.
I guess my point is, like, in the, you know, the 3 years that you've had it, like, I've seen position groups develop that aren't the offensive line, you know, like,
okay,
and I think that have taken bigger steps. I think that group needs to take a big step this year, and including next year, like when you've just got a group of a lot of new guys.
And it does play, I don't want to say chicken and the egg, but just go with me. It does play into itself where you're like, hey, the offensive line, I feel like, is kind of overachieved, but we think that because the offensive line, we don't have a lot of confidence in it, and like the guys aren't proven commodities. But I feel like in 2022, the offensive line was pretty damn good. And I know you're talking about Darnell Wright being a Pruitt leftover guy. You're not giving him credit, you know, LRB credit for that. I won't argue either way because he was a five-star lineman. I do think he finally reached his potential and became a top 10 pick. Was that development, or was that just better coaching and scheme? Or was it just him becoming the player he should have anyways? I don't know. But I feel like as long as Cooper Mays wasn't out, because that's what everyone points to in the Florida game for being so bad, like, I feel like the offensive line's been at least serviceable. Solid. And I think this year it should be good. But I would probably feel differently if Big Lance Hurd hadn't transferred here. Yes, sir.
I still wonder, without excuse me, with Arkansas, I still recall it being Sam Pittman was who they had to settle on. I think they were trying to hunt for much bigger game as far as a coach, and they ended up settling with Sam. And if you recall, he got off to a kind of a good start, and I remember some of the Tennessee fans were, maybe even me, were like, man, we should have given him a shot. But things have worked out.
9-4 in 2021, and then, yeah, 7-6, and then 4-8. Arkansas was right there neck and neck with you as Tennessee fans. They were neck and neck when it came to the SEC program that had the most to offer across the board in sports in 2021. You know, your football programs were in similar places. You could even say Arkansas was a little ahead of you in 2021. Your basketball programs were competition. Your baseball programs were competition.
Right.
It does seem like Tennessee's kind of left Arkansas in the dust a little bit. Now, maybe we'll see if Calipari can get them back, but the football program, obviously, in shambles.
Yeah.
Arkansas, Jerry Jones, Dallas, Cowboys, no, Dallas, Mavericks, Luka. Nice. Did not look good last night. Luka looks, I don't know if he's doing the Joel Embiid, like, hey, I'm going to play up, I'm hurt a little bit more whenever I'm missing shots, but he looked slow. He looked like the knee was bothering him. He couldn't make a jump shot. And Oklahoma City looks like they're going to give Dallas hell this series.
Yeah. We rewind the tape from yesterday. I was like, man, I think I like Dallas to make this a series.
I wasn't going
to
point that out.
Yeah, I will. It was a pretty bad start for the Mavs. And definitely, at least for one game, the stage didn't look too big for Oklahoma City. They look very, very good. And what I'm struck by is they don't have – you look at their roster, we know this, youngest team in the league and all this other stuff. Their most seasoned veteran with playoff experience is Gordon Hayward. He played 7 minutes last night. They don't need him. Not that he's that – you know, he's not better than a lot of these players they've got. But my point is, man, they impressed the hell out of me last night.
If – Minnesota takes care of business against Jokic and the Nuggets, we're going to be pretty much guaranteed. Either we have Minnesota breaking through, Oklahoma City breaking through, or Luka and Kyrie breaking through to get to the finals, and that seems kind of crazy to me because I do think the Nuggets are done. Yesterday I compared it to the 2011 Lakers running up against the Mavericks, and maybe this is just kind of one of those one-off years, and maybe it doesn't matter. Maybe the Celtics are the best team and they win the championship and it doesn't matter who they play in the West, but just getting to the finals, it does look like a 22-year-old Anthony Edwards, a young Thunder team with all these assets that didn't really cash anything in at the trade deadline and didn't really worry about having any backup bigs. Or their big move at the deadline was just buying Gordon Hayward off of like the scrap heap.
Yeah.
And either they're going to get to the finals or this Mavericks team, and Kyrie Irving is going to continue like his resurgence and his renaissance. But last night it looked like Luka didn't have it, and it feels like Luka has to have it if they're going to beat Oklahoma City. Because Oklahoma City is one of those teams with a good home court advantage.
No, agreed. SGA, just a sniff from a triple-double. He looked so good. I'm really impressed. You know, the guy that's under the radar, not for basketball fans like us, but Jalen Williams he's an absolute stud. He might be, you could argue he's as important to that team as Chet Holmgren or SGA.
He's a monster. Not to be confused with Jalen Williams from Arkansas, the flopper,
yes,
who's also on that team. They have two Jalen Williams, but no, the wing Jalen Williams is really good. From a personal standpoint, I can't really ever focus on his game because to me, whenever I see Jalen Williams on the court, I just see our former colleague, Chance Collins. To me, he looks just like Chance.
He does.
Every time I see Jalen Williams, all I see is Chance. I've never texted Chance that. I don't know how he would take it. I think he'd laugh about it, but I don't know. He might be like, you think all black people look the same, John? I'd be like, no, Chance, I don't think that. I just think you look like Jalen Williams, but
it's
maybe
a smile.
Maybe Chance is listening on the way to work today, and he hears me say that. But whenever I see Jalen Williams at their ball, I just see Chance Collins.
I can 100% see that.
But no, he's a stud. He's a monster, and he was one of those guys that you find from Santa Clara, and the Thunder was able to kind of take a swing on him and bring him in, and because they weren't dealing with pressure of trying to nail draft picks, so they were just like, hey, we got a lot of picks, we're rebuilding, let's just try to find some diamonds in the rough, and I think they found one with Jalen Williams.
He's changed his body a lot in the second season too. I mean, he looks much more jacked than he did after his rookie year, which I guess you got to do in the NBA. You just got to keep building up so you can endure the season. But he looked like a kid last year, and now he looks more like a grown man, and he plays like one too. Holmgren doesn't need to bulk up, apparently. He can still play.
Holmgren's really good, man.
Yeah.
The Thunder are really good, and it's kind of scary just because they're all kind of young and under contract, and they do have like 20 draft picks they can try to move and get somebody else. But the thing is, I don't know like what they really need. Their starting five is really good and makes a lot of sense together. Between SGA and Williams and Lou Dort as the defender and Josh Giddey, maybe that's the weak point. Maybe you try to upgrade there. Like if you're Josh Giddey, A, you got to be really sweating about the whole Drake Kendrick beef. Like, hey, I don't know what side he's on. I know what side people think he's on with the allegations he's dealing with. He's like, hey, actually, I'm a Kendrick fan. I'm on Kendrick's side. I don't like Drake either. But, like, yeah, maybe you could really go all in and try to find you a wing. I don't know who it would be. Maybe you try to get a reunion with Paul George, because Paul George is going to be that guy that everyone looks at this offseason like, hey, he fits perfectly at all these places because he's a athletic wing that can shoot and can handle the ball and can play enough defense. Like, to me, Paul George is going to be highly sought after between the Clippers wanting to overpay him to keep him, the Magic bringing him in as kind of the number 1/number 2 option with Paolo, the Sixers, he makes a lot of sense there, although I don't know if he wants to move all the way back to the East Coast. He has times with the Thunder that seemed to have gone well. Maybe goes back to Oklahoma City. But the Josh Giddey spot, if they could upgrade that, then they could be a real mainstay for years to come. Because if they don't win a championship, Josh Giddey is going to be the reason why.
Speaking of the Magic, have you seen mention of Klay Thompson?
Klay Thompson's another one of those guys that, like, would even make sense in Oklahoma City. He's it would make sense in Cleveland because of Max Strus' experiment. He's not giving them enough. Like, I don't know if Clay can still be that guy, but he's going to be any team that needs size and shooting at number two, at the two spot, which everyone kind of always does need size and shooting. Klay Thompson might get a bag from someone, and I don't know if the Warriors will be willing to match that and give it to him, so he's going to have a tough decision there.
Right.
Dallas looked like they missed Maxi Kleba last night. You know, I thought Gafford had good numbers, but I just didn't feel like he was actually impacting the game winning-wise, and Chet was pretty much, you know, doing the same thing to him on the other end. But once, like, Gafford was off the court, Lively looked overmatched. The bench in general looked overmatched. I thought Dallas looked a man short last night. I don't know if they have anything for the Thunder. A Thunder-Timberwolves Western Conference Finals is going to be great basketball. But, like, I don't know if the rest of America is going to care.
It's true.
But SGA and Anthony Edwards are two of, you know, the burgeoning, bludgeoning, blossoming superstars. Blossoming sounds good. Blossoming superstars. Young, ready to take that next leap and be the faces of the league, and both in small markets. Maybe a little Team USA-Canada rivalry leading into the Olympics. Who knows? But that series would be really good, but I can't imagine the TV people would be doing backflips over that. But real hoopers would. Real hoopers and real hoop fans would be excited for that. Sam, did you pay attention at all to the Thunder?
Thunder
Mavericks.
I watched hockey last night instead of these games. I'm
okay.
Not gonna lie. Yeah.
So you're a hockey fan, not just Preds.
Yeah. Well, I like the playoffs. Like, I'm not going to just watch a random regular season game, I think. But
sure,
like,
but you're actually watching what, Rangers? Are you watching Rangers?
Rangers-Canes.
Hurricanes.
Yeah, double overtime, great game.
Yeah,
and then,
that was a good one.
And then Stars and Avs was great, too. The Stars went up 3-0 in the first period, and Avs came back and won that in overtime. So.
Oh, wow. So the Stars blew a 3-0 lead at home?
Yeah.
In one period?
Yeah. That's just the Avs, though, man. Their offense is lethal. I've got a buddy who's an Avs fan, and he was like, everyone was chirping him when they were down 3-0. He was like, just wait.
Which one is more heartbreaking? Let's talk a little hockey, but really just from a fan psyche standpoint, because I don't really know the rules and, like, I understand icing and offsides and stuff, but, like, yeah. I don't know the intricacies of hockey. No one wants to hear me talk about this. But what is the more heartbreaking loss? To be up 3-0 in the third period at home and lose in overtime, or to be in the Hurricanes position where it looks like you're going to steal game two and you just keep giving up late goals and tying goals and they beat you in double overtime?
It's probably the Canes, I think. It felt like the Canes were in control of that game for, like, at least two of the periods. And
yeah, I mean, they were up 2-1 after the first period.
Yeah.
Rangers come out and tie it, but then, right before the end of the second period, the Canes took a lead. And then, again, the Rangers came and they scored what? Was it the 15-minute mark, or how long was gone? I guess it was kind of early in the third period when the Rangers
tied
it, right?
When the Rangers tied it, yeah. It was pretty early.
Okay, so it wasn't like you got down to the final minutes and thought you were going to win, but.
Yeah. No, but I definitely think that. And, they had like 50-plus shots on goal. The Rangers goalie was just standing on his head. He had like 55 saves or something like that. So I think just psychologically, when you get that many chances to kind of put them away, tie something up 1-1, steal one on the road, and then you go into double overtime, and that's just kind of a killer. I think that one hurts.
You haven't lost at home yet, but hockey, the home ice doesn't really translate like it does in other sports in the playoffs. So, like, having to win four of your next five games against the number one seed is going to be tough, at least if you're the Stars, I guess. You.
Stars are nasty. That's going to be a
You're still the one
series.
Seed, yeah. You
that's
think you can overcome that?
Yeah.
Blowing a 3-0 lead in the third period, though. Like, if I'm the goalie, or if I'm a fan.
First period. No, they were up 3-0 in the first. And then,
they gave it up in the third. Okay.
No, no, no.
Never mind.
They scored two in the second period, and then it was kind of just back and forth.
Okay.
The rest
of that. I thought you said they were up 3-0 in the third period. No, okay. That I thought they just had a complete collapse. Okay, that's a little bit different then.
Yeah.
Never mind. I was talking hockey. Let's move on. I don't have it in me. Bobby, you got any hockey talk?
No, other than I am intrigued by that Rangers series. Sounds like it's off to a great start.
The Garden's just electric right
now.
I mean, the Rangers haven't lost so far this year in the playoffs, and then, you know, you've got the Knicks. It's just like New York sports fans are just over the moon right now.
Yeah.
Do you think karma is back on the side of James Dolan after he released his song with JD and the Straight Shots? I think it was called I Should Have Known about his friend Harvey Weinstein. Do you think that was him getting karma on his side?
Maybe.
Because he talks about Harvey Weinstein and what he was doing to all those women. And he's like, I should have known.
When did this come out? I haven't heard about this.
Yeah, you know, the accusations, you know, have only been like 5 years old, I guess, yeah. Right? With Weinstein. So, I mean, I guess sometime in the last 5 years, but okay. I don't know when the actual release date was. But I'm just asking, you know, because karma seems to be on the Knicks' side. And that's the only thing I can think of because James Dolan's been such a bad owner for so long.
Yeah. I feel he can never generate good karma. I just don't think he's capable.
I really just wanted to reference the song I Should Have Known about his friend Harvey Weinstein, which is a pretty funny song to actually record. And if I'm him, I'm like, maybe just leave some art on the shelf. Maybe write that as a poem and keep it to yourself, like a therapy thing. Mm-hmm. The Garden is rocking. It would be fun to be a Knicks and Rangers fan right now.
Yeah.
They're insufferable when they're winning.
Yeah, yeah. I will say, as far as the Knicks go, and I know that, you know, you rooting hard against them right now, but I will say at least it does seem like Dolan's really trying to, like, keep the old players there and, like, in yeah. the mix. Like, that was something I think he struggled with. He kicked Charles Oakley out of the Garden, you know, a handful of years ago, and that was a big controversy. But, like, seeing Carmelo there and seeing, John Starks. John Starks has been yeah. there the entire time.
Stephon Marbury.
Marbury was there acting a fool this last game.
Did he? I don't even recall. Did he play with the Knicks for a
yeah.
while?
Yeah. No, he was with the Knicks for a good bit. I don't know how many years, but I would say at least 3 or 4 years.
Because I know he was with the Nets, too.
The whole Starbury era was kind of when he was
right.
with the Knicks.
Yeah, he is acting a fool, though. It's like, take it easy, man.
So I was that fires me up. I like when former players, and, like, you know, the Titans, they'll bring back former players. And I like it when guys seem invested in the actual culture and franchise. So that's been cool to me with the Knicks, despite their fans kind of being annoying.
Don't get me wrong. If they win the series against the Pacers, I'd be rooting for them against the Celtics for sure.
Well, last little bit here on the playoffs is good news for you, as the Knicks were already kind of only playing 6 or 7 guys, and they just lost another one. Mitchell Robinson going to be out 6 to 8 weeks with a hurt ankle, or hurt foot. And that seems like good news for the Pacers. Pacers should win this series.
It's just one less body. I mean, I think Precious Achiuwa has played better than Mitchell Robinson in the last couple of months. But you're right. It's one less body, and they don't have many to begin with. So I'll take it. I will take it.
Only one game tonight. We'll talk about that, I'm sure, at the end of the show. But
yeah,
good talk. Sam, break now, please. Now. Today is finally the day people have been wanting. Some Fan Run Radio merch. The shop, close to going live. Exciting things here at Fan Run Radio. Trying to get a little YouTube series going up. I've been grinding at that. Go subscribe to the YouTube page, Fan Run Sports. You can just put Fan Run in your search bar. Go subscribe. Trying to build that up. Smokey's night coming up, merch store coming up. Got to be honest, seeing Zach Edey's first pitch yesterday, Bob, made me a little nervous for Fan Run night at Smokey's Park.
I thought about you when I saw it. It was like, and Zach was a pitcher at one point in high school.
Was it high school or when he was like 12?
I thought it was, I don't know.
I've only seen the Little League picture of him, but I don't know.
You know, I saw him, and I thought he was in high school, but hell, I guess he probably looked like he was in high school when he was 12 with how big he was, so, like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I hope it's if he's 12. That's honestly pretty embarrassing if that was his first pitch and he's pitched in high school.
I thought he was
long ago.
Yeah, I thought he was a high school pitcher, but, again, he looked like a high schooler probably since the age of 12.
Poor guy. He just got bombed on social media, about, you know, the catcher fouled out, all the stuff about the fouls. And that's not you, man. That's not going to convey to you. You're going to deliver.
According to USA Today, he was a high school pitcher, Sam.
Okay.
Yeah, so.
What a joke, then.
Between that and my back spasm, I am a little nervous.
You could pull out for your back. That'd be easy.
We'll see. We'll see the closer.
Is that you just planting that seed a month early?
We'll see. It's not a month early anymore, by the way, Sam. We're 22 days away from Fan Run Night at Smokies Park. It is not
3 weeks.
Yeah, it is not a month. It's 3 weeks basically to tomorrow. 3 weeks tomorrow, Fan Run Night, Smokies Park. But, you know, this muscle, you know, I don't know how it works with – I've always heard, like, groins, you know, you got to be careful with groins and hamstrings. You don't want to re-pull them. I don't know how the muscle in my back works. And along those same lines, I'm pretty nervous between that and the weather for my kickball playoffs tonight's championship run.
Oh, yeah, tonight?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if I can run to first base. My back's kind of sore. I'm a little nervous. And I don't want to besmirch the sponsor or be mad, but the only thing I've been racking my brain, and I might have a bone to pick with Logan, because I feel like him having me out there stretching, I feel like I was stretching too far at Hot Works, and I feel like something tweaked in my back. And again, I don't know for sure, but that's the only thing I could think of that I did. And if that's true, Logan, I got a bone to pick with you, because I gave up my Saturday morning, and I appreciate it. We ate some biscuits and gravy. We broke bread. It was a great time. But, you know, my back's been hurt ever since. At the very least, I feel like Logan owes me a back rub. Wow. At the very least.
Wow. Wow. You guys work that out.
At the very least. Maybe I was trying. Maybe it's my fault. I was working too hard in that room stretching. Maybe I should have taken it a little bit easier. I told you I knew I was fighting for my life. Maybe I should have listened to my body and not tried to push it and be a tough guy. Maybe that's it.
It might have had something to do with being serious here, like, because all that heat loosens you up and everything. Maybe the afterwards stretch, which I'm guilty of, wasn't enough. You might not have done enough.
Maybe
a little bit icy hot, you'll be good.
Yeah,
you got any?
I got some.
You bring it?
Sure.
You rub it on me?
Biofreeze, that's another one.
It's right here. I can't reach it. See, that's the problem. I can't.
Come on,
you got it. I can't. You want me to put it on the back of my hand then rub it on?
No,
my
like, no, it's a roller ball. It's like a little ball.
You it's then nice. Roll it on me. You don't. That's even better. You don't have to.
I'm good. I'm gonna just pass on rolling out your lower back.
if it's a roller, you don't have to actually put your hands on it. So yeah, it's not like you're touching me.
I know the concept of it, John.
But that, you know, if it was like lotion or something, you'd have to like rub me. This is just a roller. You don't have to actually touch me. What's the problem?
Yeah. We'll draw straws for who has to rub you.
Fast forward a couple years, Bob's going to write a song I should have known.
Yeah.
JD and the Straight Shots remix by Bob Baskerville. I should have known whenever John tried to make Sam rub his ribs.
Get some biofreeze. That's another one, too. And that
is
might
that
be
like the same stuff?
That might be a spray. You might even be able to stand 5 feet away from John and spray it on.
Which I guess if we're going to talk about JD and the Straight Shot and James Dolan, we got to at least give a shout-out to Shador Sanders, who is now adding to his unlikability by becoming a rapper. Opening himself up for more criticism by becoming a rapper. I got to be honest, I didn't listen to the song.
It's pretty bad.
Now, do you like rap? I don't feel like you really like rap, so I don't know if you're allowed to judge.
Yeah, I don't like new rap.
You like the 2010 stuff? You like the...
the old school.
Yeah, the old school. I'm more of an old school rap fan.
I wouldn't like...
Kanye West, ever heard of him? But I'm more so listening to stuff like that, the old stuff.
Yeah, I'm not a huge rap guy, pretty much, honestly.
Yeah, so I don't know if I respect or take your opinion on Shador Sanders. I'm going to guess that it's not good, but Dion was a rapper, too. Dion had a song. I listened to, like, a five-second snippet. It is the type of rap that I don't like.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to guess I don't like it, but I'm not even going to ask Jace because he was telling me he was listening to Morgan Wallen and Raleigh Green, so I'm going to guess he's not really going to go and be a rap connoisseur either.
I mean, I like rap music. It varies, though, on like the type of mood that you're in. Sometimes you're in a country mood. Sometimes you're in a hip-hop and rap mood. So
okay. There's that. I don't mean to put you in a box.
No, you're fine.
Fair enough. I'll listen to it during the break. I'll give you my review during the break.
I did listen to it last night, though. I didn't. It's very mid.
Very mid?
Yeah,
okay.
Very mid.
Just like Shador would say. Right? Isn't that what he said about the transfer portal kid?
That's what the kids are saying.
Yeah.
We were friends. We were friends. Talk for hours without end about his latest story, how to deal with fame and glory, all the girls who adored him and catered to his every whim.
That's horrible.
Nothing he could lose. All he needed to do was choose. I should have known. I should have thrown myself across the tracks, stopped him from these vile attacks. I should have known. Damn.
That sounds like a terrible entry to a slam poetry contest.
We believed and didn't see through the lies he told us all. They led him to his endless fall. I should have known. I should have known. He's having to live with the guilt of what Harvey Weinstein did to those people. Hour two in the books. We'll talk hour three, some Titans football with Easton Freeze. Stay locked in on The Morning Show.